Every woman knows the feeling. That quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot. The moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home. That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you, because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.
Today, we are thrilled to have Jordan Zaslow with us. She's the inspiring founder of Her Bold Move, which is an organization dedicated to empowering women to take courageous steps in their political careers. Jordan's passion for advocating for gender equality and her commitment to supporting women through mentorship and resources have made a significant impact. Join us as we delve into her journey, the mission of Her Bold Move, and how she continues to inspire women to pursue their boldest ambitions. If you are thinking of getting into the political arena and you are a female, you are going to want to listen to this episode. So please welcome Jordan Zaslow. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce you to a brand that is a true love letter to all women and today's sponsor of our show, Holistic Goddess. This brand is a sanctuary for those seeking holistic health solutions, offering a space where women can heal, grow, learn, and naturally embrace their inner goddess. I've personally experienced the power of their commitment when I tried the Bison Trifecta from their Naked collection. It's a potent blend of freeze-dried bison organs, heart, liver, and kidney in capsule form. Honestly, the change was almost instant. Within probably just about 3 days, my energy level soared. I was handling my hectic schedule better and skipping my usual midday crash. So for anyone listening who wants to experience this for themselves, use code UNDERSTOOD for 10% off Bison Trifecta. Visit holisticgoddess.com and see how it can change your routine just like it did for mine. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com, code UNDERSTOOD, HOLISTICGODDESS.com. Jordan, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Where are you, as a matter of fact?
I'm in Boston, Massachusetts, and it's freezing here, but we're gonna make it.
Okay, good. You're not too far off from it getting a little warmer. I've spent a lot of years in Boston. I love it there. So anyways, thank you for being here today. So normally I don't have topics like this on my show, and I'm so happy that I have you here to talk about this topic, because it is very important. And I think a lot of what goes on in politics in general, people shy away from it because it causes a lot of controversy, or people get so animated about it and they have their opinions, or some people just, you know, they really don't want to be involved at all. But I think the most important thing is information and being able to, you know, hear both sides of everything from everyone to make educated decisions. So anyways, if people are listening and they don't know if this is the episode for them, stick with us for a few minutes, because I think this, the way that we're going to go with this is very interesting. So Jordan, you run Her Bold Move. Can you tell people what that is?
Yeah, Her Bold Move is a political action committee and a C4 that is dedicated to getting women elected, especially in the places and the states where women are the most underrepresented. So in the rooms where decisions are being made, about women, without women.
Right. And it's an obvious question, but why is it important for women to have a say and have their name in the room, be in the room?
No, it's a great question. I'm so glad you asked. So the reason, and it's becoming so especially clear these past few years, that when women aren't in the rooms where decisions are being made about us, legislation sounds like something that women didn't come up with, right? It sounds like something that people who don't necessarily know the lived experience of women, who don't really know what it's like to be a woman, what women's issues are important to women. And when women are in the rooms, the legislation and the policies sound like something that actually would improve women's lives or would, you know, keep women safer.
Right. Of course. So I kind of want to get into some statistics and some conversation about this, but take me back for a second, like how you got into this. Did you, like, where did politics fall into your family conversation when you were younger?
Yeah. So politics was definitely always something that we talked about. I remember vividly being in early elementary school and watching the news with my parents, watching presidential debates with my parents and being so plugged in and really caring. And then the next kind of major memory in this category is that when I was a freshman in high school, we were assigned to kind of the class was broken up into tables, and each table was going to be debating the merits of one of the Democratic presidential nominees, or not nominees, but primary candidates. Mm-hmm. And it was all men. And then there was one woman, Carol Moseley Braun, who was the first Black female senator. And she was running for president in the primary that year. And every single person in the room went to like all the different other tables in the room. And they were going to be supporting, you know, this guy and then this other guy and this guy. And I went to the Carol Moseley Braun table and I sat on the table by myself and I planted my butt on the table. And I was like, every woman in this classroom needs to get over here to my table, sit with me. We need to be supporting women candidates. There has never been a woman president before. This is important. And I never thought about it again until years later when, I guess it was in 2016 when Hillary Clinton ran for president and lost. And I don't think I realized how important it was to me that a woman made it that far only to not make it all the way.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you brought that up because, you know, Hillary, I took my daughter out of school I think my daughter might have been 4, just to stand in line for 5 hours. I was in Manhattan and vote. And I remember taking a picture and being like, her name is Wyatt. Wyatt, this is such an amazing day. I'm going to have a picture that you will hold on to for the rest of your life where you got to be with me when we voted for the first female president. So, and I remember how crushed she was just because she thought she was going to be part of something, you know, not that she knew the issues, not that she knew anything, but that was crushing to a little girl. And obviously it was crushing to me because I wanted her to win. But speaking of Hillary for 1 second, there's something to be said about women not being likable. You don't ever hear that word used for a man. And with Hillary, it was always, she's not likable. You know, what are your thoughts on that in general?
Yeah, that's the big question. And that's sort of the exact reason why Her Bold Move exists in the first place is, so the backstory, just to give you a sense of how we started, is in 2020, when I worked in the entertainment and advertising industry. So I was sort of like producing and directing commercials and short form content. So when production shut down because of COVID, my team and I were looking for something to do with our time and we were looking for ways to be productive. And we decided one really great way that we could get involved in the election was we could start making pro bono campaign content for women running for offices across the country. And so we started making free ads. We blasted out the offer to every woman that we knew that was running for office. And we said, we're going to make your video for free. Do you want a free video? This is what we're doing this year. And we ended up making 75 pro bono campaign ads for women running across 18 states, mostly for Congress. And that experience was so eye-opening because we started this work because we knew it was important. We knew that we wanted to help women. We knew women had a disadvantage when they ran for office. We never in our lives could have imagined what we saw that year. We saw women dealing with death threats, sexual harassment, sexual threats, all because they decided to run for office. And by the way, they weren't just like random women. They were extremely qualified women who had these amazing resumes, who understood policy and who just, you know, decided that year that they were going to throw their hat in the ring.
And yeah, actually, could you stop there for 1 second? Because I think that that's an important issue to talk about for one sec before you move on. Because a lot of people will be like, well, why would you just back a woman because she's female? It's more you are picking women who are qualified, who are running on, you know, women's rights or whatever, right? I mean, these are people that you picked for a reason, not just because of their sex.
Definitely. And we get asked that question all the time. There's a very serious and thorough endorsement process that our candidates have to go through to make sure that they're qualified, that they're viable, that they have what it takes, and that they're, you know, the kinds of candidates who will improve our country if they get elected.
Right. Okay. So now go on with what.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. I'm glad you asked that one too. So in this time, we learned this is actually a much more serious issue than we even realized. Women are dealing with so much just because they're putting their faces out there. You know, they're putting themselves out there. And that's why we're called Her Bold Move, because we didn't realize how brave it is to run for office as a woman when so many people are just waiting in the wings to you know, knock women down as soon as they dare to get in front of crowds and to put themselves out there. So it's very brave of women to run for office. And your question was about viability and, you know, likability. And I think that that's the kind of thing that is the reason that women don't run, is because it's so hard to think about the likability. Like, likability is the most holistic thing about ourselves. That's the one thing that if someone criticizes your likability, that's criticizing you as a person in the most full sense of that phrase and that notion. So the likability can be very crushing. And that's another reason why the women who do run for office are just unbelievably brave, unbelievably bold, and certainly deserve to be in leadership positions.
And it seems like it's such an easy target. You know, the reaction tends to be, she's not smart enough, she's not pretty enough, whatever it is. You know, they make fun of pantsuits or whatever they do, right? And or something about sexuality. She's either too sexual, not sexual enough. They look into her past and it becomes all about that. Where with men, it's more about, you know, other things. So it seems just so obvious that women have a much more difficult time because they have to overcome hurdles about, even no matter what they say can be taken out of context. I mean, you watch it happen all the time. What was your first biggest success that, you know, in doing this that you were like, oh, we can make a difference here. We can really help.
So the success story, the first success story where we knew we were onto something, wasn't necessarily a candidate victory, but the wave and the we were inundated with applications from candidates who wanted our help. And so we understood from seeing, I mean, I think we got hundreds, if not thousands, of applications from candidates who are running for office. So just the sheer volume of women who were applying for our help when none of us worked in politics before. So the thought that these women were looking to us for support because they had so little support really, really opened up our eyes that we were onto something really major and really needed.
And when you say support, are you talking about you were supporting them with marketing aspects? You were helping them get the word out, or were you helping them like get funded? Like what does support mean?
The definition of what our support is has definitely changed over the past few years. So in 2020, it was only campaign ads. We were only helping them by making their campaign ads for free. And then after 2020, we formalized what our support looked like and we started fundraising so that we could do this on a more formal basis. Mm-hmm. And now we help in a variety of ways. We help with financial contributions. We help them raise money from other channels. We help them with their messaging. And we just generally help with whatever they might need. We have a post-endorsement team that has a call with them as soon as we endorse them and kind of like triages their campaign to decide exactly what we could be doing to help in their unique circumstances and in their unique parts of the country.
Are you doing any training for these people that don't have any campaign, you know, experience?
So the one thing that I think is really interesting to note about that is that there are so many fantastic organizations that exist to train and recruit and encourage women to run for office. So there's a lot of support that exists on the front end before women announce their campaigns. And that's where so much of the money in this category goes from donors and philanthropists that want to see more women in office. They put a lot of that funding into those kinds of organizations. And then there's very little support for women once they've announced that they're running. So we've kind of made that our niche. Like, we're the ones who will stand with a woman, like stand by her side when she has decided to run, because that's when people start to disappear from her circle.
Got it. Okay. How many states are you in now? And how did you expand so quickly from 20? You started 2020, right?
Yeah. So in 2020, by the end of 2020, we'd worked in 18 states. And I think by now we worked in 30 states.
Wow. Total.
And do you get more applications every day?
Is your goal to have it in every state, or are there some states that actually don't need help?
It's a great question. So we will work in every state. And actually, we just got an application from a woman running in Guam, and I found out that we can help her. So I'm thrilled. So that's an extra part of the world that I didn't realize we could help. So one thing that we did when we were starting to figure out our 2024 strategy was we looked at the map and we looked at the places in the country where women are the least represented in government. Wow. And so we looked at those states. We made a list of the bottom 10 and 15 states. And we looked at those states and we said, oh my God, there's states here where women are 12% of the government. There's city councils here where there's only one or there's zero women on the entire city council. And so we looked at those places and we looked at them for a very long time. And then we said, you know what all these places have in common? These are the states that just announced their abortion bans. Like, these are the states where I just found out women who are pregnant can't file for a divorce, for example. So the women's issues and the policies that are coming out of those states are the same states as the ones that have so few women in the rooms where decisions are being made. So while we are definitely, you know, hoping to work in every state, and we will work in every state with women who need our help, we really are going to spend 2024 working on the states with the least amount of representation, because those are the states that women are not just not running for office at the same rate, but not getting elected at the same rate. And then what ends up happening is the women in those states who are just regular citizens of those states are really being impacted in serious ways.
Right. I'm curious if men could be something that you end up backing, if they are all for the same things that these women are, women's rights, and really represent what you are interested in.
No. And we get asked this all the time. And I think that, you know, it's obviously a great question. And it's something that we do think about all the time, because in certain elections, it's possible that there would be a woman who is not for women's issues and who, you know, has made it sort of her identity that she's not there to make it to government to support women and to be a voice for the majority of women in her district, for example. And then she's up against a man who is, maybe. We have finite resources, and there's so many organizations that exist to support male candidates. And they're getting a lot of resources already. So we're going to stay out of those races and hope that they get elected from support from other people.
Okay. I appreciate that. I think that's super interesting. Okay. I want to know, okay, for people that are listening that find this interesting, it seems to be true. You do not have to have studied politics in college. You do not have to be anyone, as we've seen with AOC, who used to be a bartender. And then she rose to fame in what she's been doing. Talk to me about, like, what makes, you talked about vetting people. So what makes a viable candidate, somebody who really is going to see it through, and what makes them likable to the public, so to speak?
So what makes a viable candidate, I'm realizing more and more, is really just fundraising numbers, unfortunately. And it is so unfortunate. I wish that if I could change anything about the game, that's the first thing I would love to change. Because every organization is kind of looking at, that's the very first thing that they look at before they'll make an endorsement. So that's sort of like the textbook, I guess, answer of what makes a viable candidate. But in our experience, anecdotally, that's not what makes a candidate win, actually. We've seen plenty of candidates who didn't outraise their opponents, but who were knocking doors, who were attending the community meetings, who, you know, made a name for themselves in the most important rooms in their district. those candidates were the ones who won. And so I think that the main thing that I always try to make sure candidates understand is that fundraising is very important because that's how you can keep your campaign team. But community connection and connection with the people who are actually going to be casting their ballots, that can, there's no replacement for that. There's no substitute for the connection that you can make with voters. So in some cases it's doable. You know, it's not a, it's an uphill battle, obviously, but in some cases it's possible. And especially, in the places where women are the least represented, there's not that many voters in those places. And so it is possible to make connections with every voter.
I'm curious your thoughts on AOC and her trajectory. Like, do you guys use that as a model for how you start out as someone with really no experience and then you get elected?
Not necessarily. A lot of our candidates have been in other public office for decades. You know, I think that a lot of people assume that our candidates are all going to be very young because they're, you know, we're a young organization and we're more well known to Gen Z and millennials. But a lot of our candidates are, you know, have been seasoned. Like, they've been doing this for such a long time and they really have made the connections that now this is the next step in their, the next obvious step in their career. Of course, I mean, to my earlier point about community connection, if there are candidates who have been doing that work and who have been making connections with their voters in their district for as, you know, as long as they needed to and have a name for themselves, then that's amazing too. And I think too, that being able to speak about the issues that voters care about that are not being heard, that can really resonate with voters. And I think that that's what happened in the case of AOC is she was speaking a language that voters had never heard a politician speak before. And she was speaking their language. And that's why she has risen to fame the way that she has.
Every woman knows the feeling, that quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot, the moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home. That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.
Yeah. How many candidates are you working with right now?
Now I think we're up to 30 before the primary. Our goal is to work with 50 before the primary season is over. And I think that we'll be able to announce 50 by the end of July, hopefully. Cross your fingers.
Okay. Who do you think is the strongest, or are there a couple that really stand out to you?
There is a candidate who I can't stop talking about because her story is so inspiring, and it's exactly the kind of story that I hope many, many people will copy in the coming years. So there's a woman named Allie Phillips who's running for office in Tennessee. And so Tennessee has an abortion ban. And I hope that I'm not alienating your listeners with so much talk about abortion, but it is a women's issue that's front of mind this election cycle. She was a mother already, and she had a very wanted pregnancy. She was 19 weeks pregnant with a baby that she desperately wanted. And she found out that she wasn't going to be able to, the baby was not going to make it. And the doctors said, you really need to have an abortion to save your own fertility and because this baby's not going to make it anyway. So she could not get an abortion in her state. And I think the providers were probably worried about the legal consequences of them providing her with an abortion. So she had to go to New York to get the necessary reproductive health care that was going to save her life and her fertility. And so when she came back after dealing with this traumatic experience, she came to see her own representative in Tennessee to tell him what had happened to her. And his response to her was, she should have kept the pregnancy. She should have kept going with it, even though the baby was unlikely to survive. And that if his own daughter had been in her position, he would have told her to keep the pregnancy going. And then he said that he didn't know that miscarriages could happen in second pregnancies. Like, what? So she was obviously fuming when she heard her own representative talking to her like that and expressing so little sympathy for her and obviously not changing any policies as a result, even though she told him what happened and what was likely to happen to so many other women in his district.
Right.
So she said, okay, I'm going to run for office for your seat the next chance I get. And so she is. She's running for his seat right now in Tennessee. And the best part is she's running in a seat that is flippable. Like, there is a good chance that she's going to win.
Wow.
So she's doing all the right things. She's getting tons of press. She's getting tons of media attention. And she's very smart. And she speaks about these issues beautifully. So I'm the most excited about her because I just think her story is the kind of story that you hear all the time these days about really sad and tragic experiences that are happening to women across the country. And then the sort of next chapter in those stories is really inspiring. And it's exactly what this country needs more of.
You know, I think it's so interesting when you get somebody who is genuinely personally affected by something and they want to run or because they want to make a difference, because they know that a decision maker has the ability to change people's lives. And once she's been through it, she can speak on that so much differently than just somebody who's just wanted to be in politics and just cares about the power, so to speak, you know. So we have to follow that story for sure. I just saw this morning that a Democrat, Marilyn Lanz, she ran on reproductive rights. She was able to flip the Alabama House seat. Did you see that?
I didn't, but that's exciting.
Yeah. So similar. I mean, I don't know what her personal story is, but obviously she was able to flip the seat based on, running on that merit or whatever. I wanted to talk to you about what has been going on this past week about Rona McDaniel. Am I pronouncing her name right?
Yeah.
Have you been following that story?
No, no.
Oh, well, that's okay. She's a former RNC chief.
Right.
They got rid of her recently. And then NBC decided to hire her. And Rachel Maddow and a couple other people from MSNBC, NBC flipped out. And before she could even start, she's been let go from NBC. So I thought that's interesting as a woman, who just talks about politics and all this stuff, is a woman who does not believe basically in women's rights. So you were talking before about having to be a viable candidate and you won't accept every woman. And not that she's running for a position, but, I found it to be an interesting story because people are really taking a stand against a woman who does not have, the same empathy for women that you feel that they should.
So I will never advocate for silencing a woman, no matter what her opinions are. I think that's my take. I mean, obviously the audience of NBC is not going to be receptive to her opinions,
right,
likely, but I think it's important to hear them, right? Because when you watch the news and then you like turn this channel to the next channel, it can be shocking how much different the stories are, even though they could be the same story, but the angles are so different. And so one of the things that's dividing our country is really not necessarily our opinions, but our the way that we receive information.
Right. The broadcast channels that are doing one version versus the other broadcast channel doing the other. You're saying it might be good to have two people of opposing views be on the same channel to bring both sides to that audience.
I do think so. I know that's a hot take these days, but I do think so.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I did see, I don't know if you follow these people, but I did see that Chris Cuomo is going to start working in a deal with Patrick Bet-David, I guess is his name. And he is, very Republican, very pro-Trump. And Chris is not so much, you know what I mean? So he's like right in the middle, but he's even keeled, So it'll be interesting to see them working together and really getting some good conversations going so people can really, I think that's the only way that people can make an educated decision, by hearing both sides from educated people.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So what kind of things would you say to people that are listening right now that are interested in running or getting involved? Like, how could they get started?
Yeah. So running for office, I think the most important thing is really understanding the voters in the place where you want to run. We've seen amazing candidates and amazing women with great stories and great ideas and great profiles, and they're running for office in the wrong place for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for example, like maybe they're very young and they have so many fresh ideas, but they're running for office in a place where the voters are majority 65 plus, for example. So a lot of the time women, and by the way, this is actually a problem. Women won't run for offices as frequently as men will for those types of scenarios, because, you know, they figure the odds are against them, and women tend to not do things that they don't feel qualified to do. But when it's the right race, the right district, the right situation, it can be really, really, I guess it can be the kind of thing where if everything is falling into place the right way, and you know your voters and you know your community and you know the issues that are important to them, and you know that the issues that are important to you are the same issues that are important to them, mm-hmm. it's a match made in heaven. And it will be obvious when that's the case. And if it's not obvious, it's not necessarily the right time.
Right. Getting young people involved in politics is obviously really important for obvious reasons. Do you guys have any like boots on the ground things going on in colleges, or letting people know, women in colleges, letting people know how important their voice is?
Yes, we do. We have a fellowship program that we've had since we first opened our doors in 2021. And it is a program for, it's virtual, so it's over Zoom. So we take women, young women from college campuses across the country in every time zone. And we have, each semester, we have a different group of fellows, and they will hear from the candidates that we're working with that that cycle. They'll hear from their campaign managers, their teams, they'll hear from comms professionals, they'll hear from social media professionals, and they'll kind of have access to our network that we've built up over the past few years to learn what it's like to work in politics, what's needed, what they can expect, and then how they can break in. So we are training the future of political strategists and hopefully political candidates and campaign teams.
All right. I love that. I was curious about your opinion about Jill Stein. So we all know who's running for president this year. It's all men. And then you have Jill. Will you steer people to her because she's a woman? Or what are your thoughts about everybody who's running?
Yeah, I know. These are our mission, unfortunately, can't exist in a vacuum. And the realities of what's at stake in an election cycle are always going to be at play. So in this case, it's very important for women that Joe Biden gets reelected, just because we've heard the way that Donald Trump and his administration talks about, for example, reproductive health care. We've heard the way they talk about women in general. We've heard about their plans. And if women in our country are expected to have the best chance of thriving and having a successful future 4 years, then we know that that's what has to happen. So while I love the idea of women running for office, especially for president, we have to be realistic about what's happening in our country.
Okay. I'm just curious about this because I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is not a fan of Joe Biden, not a fan of Trump. And so he knows a lot of people who are just not going to vote. Obviously, I think that's a terrible idea to not vote. But he said a lot of people, if they're not going to vote, they're going to vote for Jill Stein or someone else, because that's an easier thing. Am I wrong in thinking if you're not voting for one of those two, who it's really going to be between, not voting for them is leaving a vote open for the other candidate to win? Am I crazy in thinking that?
No, of course you're not crazy. That's definitely true. And that's exactly what happens. But our democracy was built on the fact that these elections are the only voice, really, that the American people get. So in a case where people don't feel represented by either candidate and they feel more represented by this third party candidate, it can send a really important message to the government about what they're doing. And a lot of the time it can help craft their policies because, you know, they've sort of heard from the citizens and they understand what's important and what they should be doing.
Right. What's the most, proud moment you've had since starting Her Bold Movement?
Oh my God. The most proud moment. Wow. Probably I mean, when our candidates win, there's nothing better. And especially when they're running for a seat that's like never been held by a woman before, and they're going to be shattering a glass ceiling. That's very, very, that's an invigorating moment for all of us. But one of the most emotional moments since we've started was I was on a call with a woman who I was introduced to her because someone said, this woman, she's not a donor. You know, you shouldn't ask her for like a donation or contribution. Just like she knows a lot of people and she's very plugged into to her community. And so she can maybe set you up with people who might know of candidates that you should talk to, or, you know, other community organizers that you should know or something like that. So she was kind of just like a person who knows a lot of people who I should be telling about what we're doing in Her Bold Move and hope that she can have ideas for how we can expand our impact. So I'm telling her everything about Her Bold Move. I'm going through sort of the past, present, and future. And she says to us, my mother passed away recently and she left $5,000. I don't have a lot of money, but she left me $5,000. And I know that women's issues and, you know, she was in the women's liberation movement in the 60s. And I know that this is a very important cause for her. And I only have this, all I have left of her is this $5,000 that she wanted me to put towards something meaningful. And I want to donate it to her Bold Move.
Oh.
And that was just special. That was sort of like a feeling like, because we already know the impact that we're making with Gen Z and millennials. We hear from them all the time on social media. We don't hear very much from like the generations before us who were involved in you know, second wave feminism and who are probably looking at what's happening in the world right now and with terror. We don't hear from them as much. So to hear that not only is this woman whose mother has been involved in such important moments of women's history, that this is something that she thinks will carry the torch to like the next generations was so beautiful and really stuck with us.
Oh, what a special story. So now that you've been doing all this stuff and you hear, you know, from all these people and you're so involved, do you think you would ever run for office?
No, I wouldn't run for office. Mostly because I think that we can have the most impact by the fact that we can help dozens of women at a time. And I'd much rather see the volume. I'd much rather see more women in office than just, you know, sort of me in my one little corner of the country. So I wouldn't run. I think that my time is best spent working with all these other candidates. But I get asked that all the time.
You do. Okay. Lastly, how can the listeners help? How can people get involved? And where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, so we are at herboldmove.org. We're on Instagram, herboldmove. We're on all of the social channels, herboldmove. And I mean, you can always sign up for our mailing list so you can hear about our candidates that we're going to be working with and you can find ways to support them. And then, you know, if you live in one of the parts of the country where our candidates are running, you can find out how to work with them and work on their campaigns. And then
that's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So our website is great. So sign up for our newsletter and we send emails on a pretty regular basis with ways to get involved, and to help out. And, we sort of just stay in touch that way.
Amazing. Well, I wish you the best. I want to stay in touch. I think it's so cool. I mean, I know so many people. I've met so many people over the last couple of months, especially because of this year. I'm like, what's going on with the election? That are like, God, I really want to have a voice, but like, I don't have the platform. I don't have the way to make a change. And I think it's really important for listeners to know you can always make a change, whether it's by supporting someone that you really like or doing something on your own. So I think you're a great example of that and people should definitely look you up and be in touch. So Jordan, thank you so much for being here and I'm excited to see what the future holds for you guys.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.